How did you,
Yeah.
you know, to be the first person from your family to go and kind of break the cycle, it sounds like. What do you, I guess, contribute that to?
Man, that's great, man. You know, Jess, that's a great question. I really attribute my earliest success to be able to look above stuff that I was going through my mother. My mother, man. My mother, and in most African American families, and not only just African American families, but most of them, you know, because I did have a father in my family. I wasn't fatherless, but my mother she was strong, man. And she always taught me that I could do anything I wanted to do. She always told me that no matter what you go through, no matter, don't, you know, don't allow anybody to put you down. I mean, you can make and you can do it. You said, she told me, she said, people get up out of the same bed you get up out of. And, you know, it's up to you. And you can overcome anything if you just put hard work in it, believe in yourself. And then she actually modeled that for me. I mean, this is a woman that never got the opportunity to go to school, man. And when she raised all of us, when she got around 50 years old, she went back to college and was on the dean's list at 50. So it was crazy. So my mother taught me to believe in myself. She was a straight shooter, but she was always there for me. And I think that's so important. If you're ever going to believe in yourself, you need some consistency. You need somebody that's going to stick with you. And if you don't find it, it's going to be very difficult because nobody makes it by themselves.
Welcome to Parenting Teens Today with Jesse LeBeau.
Thank you so much for being here. So excited. How you doing?
Hey, Brother Jesse, I am so excited to be here with you, man. I mean, anybody that hangs around Jesse LeBeau has to have to be excited. You will not allow anybody around you to not feel contagious and just grab into who you are, man. So I'm grateful to be here with you too, man.
I love it. I love it. You got to be a high energy around me or else that's
Absolutely. Absolutely. You got to be your best self.
I'm forcing it. I'm forcing it, whether you like it or not. So I think, you know, we've been talking for a little bit and I know your story, but I would love just to hear kind of in your own words where the Dr. T story all began. How did you get to where you are today? And feel free to take that back as far as you want, but I'm thinking kind of, you know, the early days and how it all began.
That's a great question, Jesse. Man, it all began with me. I mean, I grew up in the inner city in Knoxville, Tennessee. My parents, we call it affirmative action, was, you know, we all lived in the projects. So I know what it's like, you know, to live in. Well, back then I lived in the projects, didn't even know they were projects. I mean, you know what I mean? I didn't allow the external circumstances around there to dictate how I felt about where I lived. But you know, modern day, we were in dire straits, you know, we were in a tough situation. Excuse me 1 second. Where it was just tough, just growing up, man. You know, having a lot of things around me, a lot of distractions, trying to fight my way through. So I was always a tall kid, right? I was taller than anybody. Yeah, man. Everybody else was short, so I'm like 6'7". So the
Wow.
people I was around, yeah. And
I didn't
so,
even know this. Okay.
yeah, man. I'm 6'7". So you know, I'm a tall guy, and most of my friends are there. And, you know, I was always trying to live my life to try to obtain something, right? And I struggled with, you know, my height. And also, you know, I had low self-esteem problems. I struggled with who I was and my identity and stuff like that, man. So it was just very difficult for me. So I grew up just trying to figure out my life, you know. I was the only person in my family, you know, if you fast forward in years to come, I was the only person in my family ever graduate with a PhD, number one, with a bachelor's. So I was kind of always leading in that realm.
You know, it's funny to me what you're saying there is as a shorty, you're like, I struggled with my height. And I'm like, well, I felt like I struggled with my height. I feel like you were succeeding with your height. But isn't it funny? You'd think the guy that's tall, like, oh, he has what I want. But you're like, I'd rather be like kind of just fitting in and more average size. So you
Yeah.
felt like you stood out and you had a tough kind of go just socioeconomic where you were living. How did you,
Yeah.
you know, to be the first person from your family to go and kind of break the cycle, it sounds like. What do you, I guess, contribute that to?
Man, that's great, man. Jess, that's a great question. I really attribute my earliest success to be able to look above stuff that I was going through my mother. My mother, man, my mother. And in most African-American families, and not only just African-American families, but most of them, because I did have a father in my family. I wasn't fatherless, but my mother was, she was strong, man. And she always taught me that I could do anything I wanted to do. She always told me that no matter what you go through, no matter, don't allow anybody to put you down. I mean, you can make and you can do it. You said, she told me, she said, people get up out of the same bed you get up out of. And, it's up to you. And you can overcome anything if you just put hard work in it, believe in yourself. And then she actually modeled that for me. I mean, this is a woman that never got the opportunity to go to school, man. And when she raised all of us, when she got to around 50 years old, she went back to college and was on the dean's list.
Wow. At 50 years old.
So it was crazy. So my mother taught me to believe in myself. She was a straight shooter, but she was always there for me. And I think that's so important. If you're ever going to believe in yourself, you need some consistency. You need somebody that's going to stick with you. And if you don't find it, it's going to be very difficult because nobody makes it by themselves.
Shout out to your mom. What an amazing just lesson real quick for everyone watching this. If you are a mother, just the power of, it is just incredible. A mother's selfless love and willingness to put other people, to put their children ahead of themselves. And there's some amazing research I know out of Harvard that talks about the power of one caring adult. So you could be dad, it could be mom, it could be uncle, it could be someone in the neighborhood, but one caring adult, like you said, consistently in their life made all the difference for you. And you're literally living proof of that exact thing.
I am, man. And Jesse, I've seen a lot of my friends, it really hurts me a lot and not make it. But also I had another, like one of those stand people that will stand with you. I had a man named Mr. Martin. And Mr. Martin was a neighborhood guy. You remember this guy. He's always somewhere around the basketball court.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
Always around sports somewhere. Mr. Martin would come get me. And he would take me back and forth to play basketball. And I was lousy playing basketball back then. I was tall. I was goofy, man. I didn't believe in myself, low self-esteem. I still struggle with that. And I was just struggling, man. And then he just kept coming to get me. I could always depend on Mr. Martin. Everybody needs a Mr. Martin. And I guarantee you, somebody that's listening to this today, you know exactly who I'm talking about. You can identify your Mr. Martin in your life. And everybody has to have a Mr. Martin, somebody that believes in you, just like my mom, and that sticks with you, man. Kind of like a rites of passage, but they stick with you and see you through stuff and believe the best in you and put you in difficult situations that you think you can't get out of, but to help you get over that thing that you thought you couldn't get over. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you ended up going and playing college ball, right?
End up playing college ball. I went to a school in Nebraska. Well, first I played high school basketball, and our high school team was, man, we were like probably like number 20th in the nation back at that time. One of our guards played on the University of Kentucky team that won with Goose Givens, Rick Robry, and Kyle Mason, all those guys. He played on that team. My point guard did. But I went to a school in Nebraska. Wow. So I went all the way out to Nebraska, man, and then I played basketball out there. I played D1 down at Austin Peay State University. I played there. But I was just chasing basketball then, you know what I mean? I thought I was going to go pro, but I didn't really have that other balance, that personality, that self-confidence, and that kind of work ethic that it demanded that the pro, athletes have to be. I wasn't really sold out. So my mind was just pulled from so many different directions, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Because here I was facing life and had all these things facing me, and I couldn't figure out what was I going to do with my life, So I felt my identity, right, in sports. And then when sports, I kept going to school, went to college, and all of a sudden that kind of, I saw that I wasn't going to be a professional basketball player. So, man, you can imagine. I know you've been through that. That hurt.
What now?
What am I going to do, And so I went through this lull. And then I just heard my mother's voice, and I heard those Mr. Martin say, get up, fight, believe in yourself, don't just sit down. And that's what I did. And so sooner or later, fast forward 10 to 15 years, here I am with a PhD, in clinical psychology. I was one of the first ones to ever graduate with a degree. I was author of several books. I just finished a major publication with the President National Medical Association, Dr. Ron Bailey. I mean, with Springer Publishers, a major publishing company. I mean, yeah. I have a podcast, I have a million followers, Dr. T, the people psychologist, real relationships with Dr. T. I mean, who would have thought, man? Who would have thought? Here I am.
A little old Knoxville.
Good old Knoxville, man. Lonsdale Projects in Lonsdale, in Knoxville, Tennessee, brother. Here
I am. Congratulations, man, on all your success and how far you've taken it and continue. You know, it's always interesting to see people when they reach levels of success, if they kind of sit back on their laurels and rest, or if they want to keep, you know, aspiring and keep, you know, moving forward. And I've found that a lot of times that progress, continuing to make progress and improving, is the thing that I'm addicted to. And so I don't think that I could ever sit still. And I know that you certainly aren't, but I wanted to ask you, when it comes back down to sports, because we share that love of basketball and sports, what lessons do you feel like basketball taught you that helped you in life, if you feel that there were some lessons there?
Oh, man. Man, number one was, I tell you, the first thing it showed me, that in order to know your strengths, you got to find your weaknesses. You got to identify the foundation. That was foundational for me, because I had to really get, I was trying to find my strengths, but I understood I had more weaknesses than strengths. But I understood that, you know, once I identified those, I could make it. I heard a statistic, and it was kind of like a failure when I couldn't succeed. And then it seemed like failure, but it brought me back down to find out where my weakness was there. And then I could understand what I needed to work on. So basketball kind of did that to me. It kind of put that kind of climate, the opportunity for me to even experience that experience of trying to find my strengths, but then noticing that my strengths are seeing some of my weaknesses and identifying. And then from that, everybody knows about teamwork. I mean, teamwork is it. Teamwork makes the dream work, right?
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, man. And so I understood also, along with teamwork, I understood the power of knowing your strength then, because sports taught me that you have to play in the right position. You know, I couldn't be a point guard like you. I need to get down there in the paint. I need to stand in that paint. I was a great rebounder, offensive rebounder. But that took some time for me to be able to understand that, because everybody was scoring, the Dr. J's. I mean, all these people scoring baskets, and Michael Jordan. I had to understand that I could score, but I could score within my own self. I had a certain talent, and I had to hone that. And basketball kind of taught me that. And basketball also taught me about, you know, consistency, man. Working out, you got to put a work ethic in. You know that old thing about how do you tell a successful person? You have to have the wow factor, winning attitude, overcoming all obstacles, and a strong work ethic. That's so important. Winning attitude, ability to overcome obstacles, and a strong work ethic. You know, if you're gonna get anything, you got to work for it. And basketball taught me that hard work produces it. You know,
that's a great point with the strengths and weaknesses. I love that, because you really, a lot of times in life, we just want to lean into the thing that is our strength, which is great. And I think I see this with a lot of parents too. It's like, oh, well, if my kid fails at this, or if they don't succeed in this area of their life, then maybe I just protect them from that. And I move them in a different direction, because they get sad and they get embarrassed. They didn't make the team or whatever. But I believe that is the exact opposite of what you should be doing. As basketball players, when we find out, like, hey, I'm little, I got to be faster. I got to figure out how to create space. I got to use my left hand so that I can have a chance to get this shot off around the hoop. I got to utilize the pump fake, so you big guys get caught in the air and I can pass it while you're flying, you know. But if you only focus on the strengths, then you miss out on that whole other aspect that's going to make you well-rounded, and it also is going to help you with adversity. So I think that's so powerful. Now, you as a teen expert, but I wanted to say relationship expert, that's in whether it's in the African-American community, whether it's interracial relationships, whether it's parent and child relationships, what are some of the things, and maybe we want to go parent, teen for this conversation, but if you feel led in another direction, but what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see parents making when it comes to their relationships with their teenagers?
Well, one thing is that they're just too hard on them. Sometimes I think that sometimes parents are trying to live their life out on their child. You got to pour into that child. I'm not trying to say you be unrealistic and be totally oblivious to what's truth. I mean, if you got a kid that can't play basketball, he just can't play. But you've got to create, parents need to create the climate for their children's positivity. Let's go back a minute. They got that climate for the parent is the most important thing to paint for that child. You got to make sure that that environment is good, because as a psychologist, sometimes we try to decontextualize, meaning that we try to justify that things can happen without outside of the context. But everything, Jesse, happens within the context. Relationships happen within the context of two people. The environment and being socialized happens within the context of interacting with some other person. So you got to set the context. And then you got to also understand the importance of how important it is to the environment. So parents, you are the contextualized builder. You are the person that's going to put in your child and set that context every day. Because children are like, man, they're like computers, man. They're sucking all that up, man, early. So parents, realize how important you are. You're key to that child. And then secondly, don't beat yourself up. Step up all the time. Some people get beat up about their kids and wonder that they just weren't good parents. You know what? You may have made a mistake, but it's about how you end. It's not about necessarily your beginning. It's about how you wind up, And now everybody gets a second chance, and that's life. And hopefully you'll get that second chance for your child. But to build that context of positivity for that child, realize that the importance of being there for them is so important. It's so important. Talk to them any and more than that, more than talking, listen. My grandmother told me, she said, you got one mouth and two ears
For a reason.
for a reason. Have a small mouth and big ears. Listen to them. Listen to them within their context. And parenting is hard. It really is. And then add some laughter in there with your relationship with your child. Spend some of those good moments of because those are the building blocks that they're going to reflect on when they're facing tough situations. And if you're modeling in front of your kids and you model something bad, be honest with it. Own your stuff. Own your stuff, parents. And then that kid will own theirs a lot of times. So, I think those things are very important.
Man, I love all of that. And that mirroring thing is such a big thing where how they're patterning off of what you do. So it's not so much what you say, they're watching what your actual actions are on a day-to-day basis, and they're gonna start falling in line. And so a lot of times I think just naturally as humans, we could talk a good game. And especially with the internet and social media, man, I see these celebrities. And it's like them doing a selfie video, kissing their kid. It's little Timmy's birthday today. He's 11. And it's like, just be there in the moment and not having to show everyone, because I guarantee little Timmy is annoyed as crap that you're filming this and putting it out to everybody right now. But you're doing this like PR release that everyone needs to know what a great dad I am. In the other one that you mentioned there, about offering yourself some grace. Like, what a powerful one, because there was a point there where I went a couple of years and I talked to about 10 to 15 moms a day. And I'll tell you what, it would come to tears on these phone calls. And a lot of the times it was because they are so hard on themselves and they love their kids so much, they would do anything. And it's just killing them that their kid is suffering at school and isn't making friends and is being bullied and is having self-harm thoughts and acted out on these different things. But knowing that you're doing the best you can, everyone else is having a hard time too. It is hard to be a parent. It's hard to be a human. It's hard to get through a pandemic, but you can do it, and you're not alone. I think that's such
Absolutely.
a powerful message.
And Jesse, that's true.
So you said when it comes to, we were talking earlier, when it comes to relationships, it really is the most important thing in life. My dad used to tell me, your relationship with a woman is going to dictate, you know, your entire life, you know, and as we're talking about, it's your relationship with everyone, with your family, with your friends, with your community, with your classmates, with your coworkers, depending on where you are in life. And so it's so funny that so little emphasis is put on understanding and mastering how to be in a relationship, how to be a good person in a relationship. And one of the roadblocks I see for kids today is this little thing in our pockets called a phone, because they're there and like, well, I don't need to have relationships. I can just go and I can have relationships through a screen or watch videos or just distract myself from how much I don't like my look and my life and my grades and my friends. So what is your take on relationships between kids and their phones and how parents should help them navigate that? Do you have any thoughts on phones and screen times and social media?
Man, that's
how much time we got.
I know that's right. Well, I'm thinking I can see the benefits of like technology.
Yeah.
Technology connects us with so many things, but you got to understand relationships can break from disconnects. So if you're so consumed in the electronic world, then you have no time for that interpersonal reality of where you live. And there's a death set that happens. And so it's got to do with connecting. You think, I mean, social media, if you spend more time on your cell phone, you spend less time with the people around you. I mean, it's almost like you're so consumed with how you communicate within that realm of communication. So, but there's a human interaction, this interpersonal, that is so invaluable. Spending time with someone like that, that I don't think technology can replace. So I think we need to try to, you know, limit our time with electronic media. Like you said, some people, I've seen young people that will come up to me and they'll just, they say hello by looking at their phone. They won't even, sometimes they won't acknowledge me. So they're kind of out. And so I'm thinking you need to come down to the real world here and understand that, you know, you need to look up and see people, make eye contact. Just there's something about that. And I think overall, and Jesse, I may be wrong, but I think that God has given us the ability to be able to have people in this world so that we can relate that way. So it's got something to do with who we are and how we socialize and how we become who we are. So we can't constantly get that through a cell phone. You got to take some of that time out. Now, I'm not saying that you just drop it, go cold turkey. I'm saying that you've got to, you know, relate to the people around you. Learn things around, you know, people and interact with people. I mean, it's so much a part of being human, you know. So,
man, I'll tell you personally, when the pandemic was going on and I had to wear a mask and other people were wearing masks, man, it hurt my heart and my soul not being able to connect with people and just be able to smile and say hello. That literally just having being able to smile and see them smile and connect in a twinkle in someone's eye, that had a profound effect on how I felt. You know, it definitely got me down and like, wow, this is horrible. Like this is no way to live. And I agree with you wholeheartedly that there is no replacing a human, you know, connection, you know, outside of a screen. And I think it is one of the biggest things that is contributing to this spike of all the horrible stats that are happening with kids when it comes to depression, anxiety, self-harm, all of those things. Yes, there's a lot of factors, but there's no doubt the research has been done that it is not a net positive for most kids. And if your excuse is, well, all the other kids are on their phone and have Snapchat and TikTok, then we have to have a whole nother conversation about that, because you wouldn't use that logic for any other thing. If the other kids were doing drugs, if the other kids were spending their time in certain places, you wouldn't be like, well, all the other kids are. But it is, the tough part is, it is a thing where it's a pretty good babysitter, right? It's a pretty good distractor. You can put on the thing and, all right, I get a little me time. And I get that, because it is a lot of work raising kids, a lot of time, a lot of energy, and exhausting. So it's this scale. So,
and no, I was going to say, and there's a cause and effect to that. If you think about it, You're right. Research supports that during the COVID-19, that the prefrontal cortex on most millennials and most young people was had a thinning that happened because of the but they were distanced apart from human relationships. That, if you reason to yourself, or it kind of withdrew people into themselves, and I think that's what happened. Then people had to really deal with themselves. I mean, when the COVID did that too, it just didn't only drive you to, more habits of facing your electronic media, but also drove us in more, where we grouped ourselves around a little group. And see, and what that does is, if you put yourself, sooner or later, if you're left by yourself, you'll start seeking out people that thinks like you do. And so if you only get around people thinking like you do, how can your mind expand? So I'm just saying that sometimes with social media, like I said, it deduces you down to a narrower place than what you are. With all the variety and all the things that we talked about beginning in our beginning conversation, all this stuff around us creates a sense of growth. With our work in diversity with different cultures and things, man, I learn how much I don't know. But it develops my flexibility of my mind to be able to look outside my circumstances. And it's like like you were saying too, I never over learned that I could overcome something until I faced it, went through it, and then overcame it. There's levels to that. And so sometimes in life, if we break our lives down to just one level, one certain electronic media, we prevent ourselves from looking outside to other areas where we can overcome certain things. It just compartmentalizes, in a way, the way we think and the way we feel and the way we socialize.
Man, I couldn't agree more. The people who go through some of the most difficult things, the most dire circumstances that hit that rock bottom in the adversity, are a lot of times the people that achieve the most, and they use that as a tool. But then there's a lot of people who go through those things and they don't choose to get better. They choose to get bitter. They choose to give up, blame other people, blame their circumstances. And they may be, in my opinion, right to feel that way, but there's nothing positive that comes as a result in their life for choosing to be the victim. But when they go, hey, this is unfair, this isn't right, but I'm gonna rise from the Knoxville, you know what I mean? Inner city.
Ashes, yeah.
I'm gonna achieve something. It's truly remarkable, and then it's inspirational to all those other people. And I just think that that is absolutely incredible. That's why I love your story. I want to know though your opinion. There's no right or wrong answer here. Today's world versus 20 years ago, which time is it easier or harder to be a parent, or is it the same?
Easy. You said that my choices are today's world and what,
Is it
20 years
easier or harder to be a parent today than it
ago?
was 20 years ago?
Oh, hands down, man, harder.
Right.
Right now is the most difficult time to be a parent right now. Oh my goodness, yeah, because they got so many things that we're pulling for. I always tell people that what holds your attention holds you. We got so many things on these young people that's trying to vie for their attention. So whatever holds your attention holds you. So it's difficult for these children when they're just distracted by so many things coming at them. And it's difficult as a parent to be able to understand how to approach that. How do I get in touch with my child where he is or where she is? How can I do this? It's very difficult now.
100%.
Yeah.
So when it when a when a when a kid comes home from school, this is when I hear from parents a lot, how was your day? How was your day? And fine, what happened? Nothing. How do you coach a parent to approach that conversation in order for them to have a coexisting, healthy parent-teen relationship?
Wow. Well, you mean if you've got a child that is just not really communicating, just not opening up and talking, and well, I think probably the first step would be to get you some help. You got to kind of reach out, because sometimes you might not know how to deal with that. I mean, it's just sometimes you may be offensive toward that. You may be thinking that it's something that you're not doing, or that you're unable to handle, because it's hard to pull things out of people, out of kids. But if I see a child come home and I'm asking them a question, first I'm going to give them some space. You know, it's first best time to just, maybe sometimes you just need to be alone sometimes, you know. And but for the child that's consistently not responding, then like I said, I would find some help. I would find a therapist or a counselor or somebody that could help pull that out. That's a little bit more trained than I am, you know, a lot of times. And then I would actually maybe do a journey back and see just what happened in the child's life. I mean, you maybe have to get involved in kind of where they've been before they came home. What are they going through in the school? So start looking outside the child before they come home to find out if there's anything that's causing this child to go within like that. And sometimes just sit in silence. Sometimes it's good to just sit there in silence with them and let them do their thing. Find out what they're doing. If they're going and playing the video games, jump in the video game with them, because sooner or later, some communication might happen when they're ready to communicate. Just because they don't communicate doesn't mean they're not ready to communicate. So you got to find ways to be able to get into their lives until they're able to communicate too. So I think all of that, I don't think it's not, I mean, how many, what is the number one thing? I just think you just keep trying those kind of things I just mentioned, and maybe more.
How did this become your passion, Dr. T? Helping people with their relationships. When did you, was it a light bulb moment for you? How did you get this passion?
Man, because in my own life, I tell people, the reason why I'm trying to help kids is because I needed help. When I was raising a family, I didn't talk much. You know, you never ask questions. Because then I'm going to tell you, it was secret. Everything was secret. So I was asking questions. So nobody never told me about anything. And I used to see kids with their heads down. And I've always been one that, I don't like to see anybody feel bad. I guess one of my personality traits is I'm a big helper. I'm a helper. I like to go in and try to make people feel better. That's kind of who I am. And I think that came from me going through the struggles I had. And also I take it back to my mother. My mother was that kind of person. She always came into my life and made me feel better. She was always there to give me positive things. And so I don't want to never see any kid without any positive stuff, man, because I know what it's like as a kid when I wasn't feeling too good about myself. And what I, and then what happened to me was my mom and Mr. Martins and other people in my life that made me feel better, the importance of having that. So I don't want to ever see anyone struggle by themselves. That's, one is a lonely number. Loneliest number that you ever choose, one of those rock and roll old songs. They don't know. That's old school.
Yeah.
So I don't want to. I've always, I don't, that one, man, I don't like to see people lonely and suffering in isolation. I've had a passion that people get past that because yeah. I've had my life like that. And I've seen, even my family, I've had some mental health with my, you know, my sisters and some people in my family, I've seen how they suffered. And so, and then the tough battles with depression and stuff like that. I've seen that. So yeah. That's kind of my passion, man.
Awesome, man. Yeah, that's such a beautiful thing when you can take your pain and your experience and you can turn it into something that helps other people, as opposed to like what we talked about earlier, where you could easily feel sorry for yourself and just kind of wallow in misery and live in regret. Or, hey, I'm going to take massive action and go this other route that's going to help other people. And I'm sure it's very fulfilling for you as well. And in turn, it's kind of one of the most selfish things you can do is help other people, right? Because you're like, this makes me feel so good. What is your...
And Jesse, I tell you what really...
Oh, go ahead.
I tell you what, the light bulb for me in my life, man, there's an old quote I always listen to believe in your own thoughts, to believe what's truth for you in the private of your own heart, that's intelligence. See, I've often thought that I wasn't intelligent. But once I understood that if I believed in myself, intelligence follows. It was so simple.
Yeah.
And somebody taught me to believe that I could think.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think I could think.
Yeah.
I didn't think I could think, man. And then somebody like put in my life, yes, you can think. Believe me. And then put that belief in myself, because self-esteem is all about the incapacity to view yourself, incapable of doing stuff. And I've had several people to help me, man. And so once I believed that, I'm soaring ever since then, man. Shoot. Hey.
It's that self-esteem and confidence piece. It's funny. You've mentioned it a couple of times. It's a common thread through most of these conversations, I feel like. And whether it was when you were wanting to be a basketball player, but you didn't have the confidence because you didn't have the had just developed the skills yet, or even going pro, you're like kind of the thing that separated me. I probably had the size and the athletic ability and the skills, but I didn't have the mindset. I didn't have the confidence and the work ethic maybe that I needed to do those things. And then even post sports, like having the confidence to be like, all right, I can go and do this. I can start this business. I can get this degree. I can help these people. I can have a top podcast with 1 million plus listeners. And it's the same thing with the kids. And that's the very heart of our program is it's all focused on building confidence, because if that kid believes in themselves, if that kid believes, hey, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, I'm loved enough, I have people that care about me and they make me feel seen and heard and cared about, then that will make all the difference in their life, just like with your mother in your life. And so I love that. And it just reminds me that we're all, at the end of the day, we're all just big little kids that are figuring it out. And we all can learn from these lessons of like, man, believing in yourself makes all the difference. That story that I tell myself makes all the difference. Those thoughts you're talking about, like where your focus goes, like your thoughts, like that's everything. And so many people aren't in control of their thoughts because it's the next 1,000 TikTok reels. And so they're never truly the master of their own thoughts. And so, dude, I just love it. I wanted to ask you, the number one, if you could, you're kind of an inspired guy, I feel like. So, do you have an inspired word that you could share that if a parent only took one thing away from today, what would that be? Maybe your number one parenting tip. It could be something you already touched on or something totally different, but I wanted to just turn it over to you for a chance to share anything that was on your heart.
Thank you, Jesse. I want to just say what you just said, really. Parents, I want to charge you. Everything that you put in your child, make sure that you put in them to believe in themselves. There's no substitute for a parent's love to instill in them to believe in themselves. Some of us may think, Michael Jordan said it, sometimes you have to be selfish to win. And it's not selfish to have to be selfish. Dr. King said, Martin Luther King says, in order to love other people appropriately, you got to love your own self properly. So teaching those kids proper love of themselves is the greatest jewel you'll ever give a kid. Because once they have that foundation in their heart and in their head, I don't care what they face, their belief in themselves that their parents put in them will be foundational toward any rocky road or any obstacle for them to overcome.
I love it, man. Well, I just want to take a second, Dr. T, to acknowledge you for all the amazingness that you put out into the world, for the work that you do, for the people that you impact, for the lives that you transform. And I just from one person to another, I just want to say I'm so grateful that the world has you. I'm excited that we found each other here. And I'm really excited at the future and the things that we're talking about doing coming up here. And we'll maybe save that announcement for later down the road. I want to leave it with one last thing, my last and final question for you, I promise. You are going to go back in time, or even if it was today, and you are going to have your first kid, you're becoming a parent. What would be the advice that you'd give yourself if you were doing it all for the first time?
I would sit down with that kid and I would tell them that failure is never final. Never final. Failure is the opportunity to do it over again and to do it better and do it differently. Just because you're facing something now that you may, everybody fails. Everybody at the foundation of anything that they do is new. If I could say this, Steph Curry, I think he has a 47% or something like that shooting average. He misses more shots than he hits, and he's the league leader.
Best of all time.
People will remember your hits, not your misses. So I want to also encourage the children now, or whoever I'm talking to right now, this kid, nobody will ever see your work ethic. The work you put in you, it may come out 47%, but you are a winner for doing the work and also for seeing yourself as not a failure. Keep doing what you're doing, because failure is never final. It's a plateau towards success.
It's never final. I love it, man. It's so funny because my whole thing is attitude is everything. And I feel like that message almost connects with everything that people say, whether it's religion, whether it's philosophy, whether it's failure is never final. I'm like, yeah, that's like another way of saying your attitude is everything. You fail, but you just keep going. You don't give up. You continue to move forward. So that's music to my ears. I absolutely love it. And everyone, the best place if you want to go check out Dr. T is drt.net, but it's drtee.net, correct?
Got it. Correct.
Awesome. And they can find the podcast and everything on that site.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Dr. T, you're the man.